crap. We're doing this. Yeah, man, I'm like really excited. It's a little bit nervous because I've been thinking about this for the last 4 years. Somewhere in the back of my mind.
Okay. And what started the whole thought process?
The whole thought process was, of course, through like the experience of like my first time going, knowing that I will go into court, and the fear of stepping in court as a dude. I was like 23 years old, didn't really have money, didn't know what the hell I was doing, and I had all the general assumptions that we all have as men, or like that are present in society, of like when you go to court, you are bound to lose. It's a gamble.
That's right.
And I think that that's how somebody worded it. It's, you know, you don't ever want to gamble with your child. And so when I was like going through it, I couldn't help but think of how I just like, I wanted to share the experience. I wanted to educate others about my experience. And when my ex first got pregnant. Because at that point, it's like, once again, I'm a young man. I have no idea what I'm getting myself into. Where do I go and start finding the information to navigate the situation? It was 9 months of confusion. And I kept going to every dude out there to try and see what their experience was like. And the information was not readily available, you know. It was hard to find. And what I had to resort to was like learning from other people's experiences almost. And that's what I was looking for at the time. But I was not getting that information packaged in the way that I really wanted it, that it would have been very constructive or very helpful. So I had to jump through so many hoops and so much stuff on my own at these early stages, and take a lot of risk. And I, like, for the rest of the journey, I always wished that I could like impart other people with my knowledge.
Okay, so where did you start?
Where did
you start looking for like the knowledge, and like how did you start your process in navigating this?
It was terrible. I would like go to every dude and I'm like, how was your how was your significant other, your wife, your lady, like how was she during pregnancy? Like how did you handle it? And what I noticed at a very early stage is that our experiences are very different. And by that I mean most women I would ask would be like, oh, it wasn't too bad. You know, like they'll talk about like, you know, the cramps, the hormonal changes, the, you know, pregnancy brain. But generally, they're like, it wasn't too bad. But if you went to the dude, some dude will just be like blank, quiet. Or just like, I've seen this one dude actually like just kind of like, just head went down. And I knew that whatever he went through something. And He'll never talk about it. But I wanted to know what he went through. And so that was like the very, very beginning of like the journey. The other part where there was a lot more mystery was when it came down to court itself. Because like people don't generally talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's a topic that is rarely ever talked about, and it seems to be a topic that is probably most necessary to be talking about at this moment. So what are your aspirations for the show?
I think I wrote down earlier, like, saving mankind jokes. But it's like, it's really, the first big thing will be to create a platform that is going to facilitate dialogues. Learning off of other people's experiences is really what I'm looking to encourage. If there's any way we can have people come on and tell their stories, and within them telling their stories, other people can understand how to navigate their own personal experiences. So that's one of the big things. The other thing is that I'm a bit of a nerd.
Yep.
And I love going through research, because essentially research influences policy, right? Mm-hmm. Whenever government officials and lawmakers and judges and lawyers, all these people, like, they get all their information from the research that is coming out. So I found it essential to explore the research and break it down in layman term, so we're not just blabbing whatever we think. Mm-hmm. Because we have some assumptions that we're going to be wrong about and others that we may be right about. But I think going off the research will be really helpful to provide clarity. And there's this, like, I've been reading a lot of papers over the years, and there's come, like, one of the things that I realized is that there was a point where what we were doing was wrong. Mm. For many years, what we were doing was outright wrong.
Yep.
And although we're trying to, like, you know, the court has come a long way. They're trying to, like, rectify a lot of these things that were very much one-sided.
Can you explain some of those one-sided things? Like, what is it that you felt have been one-sided?
One of the big things that I encountered through my own personal experience is that you are not recognized as a man. Like, your role and contribution is still very much like, yeah, like, it's good to have you around as a dude. Like, it's good to have men around. Like, the child needs their fathers, but that doesn't really translate to the actions. Like, if, like, one of the big things that I had to, like, navigate was, how do I maintain a foothold in my child's life from a very young age and not get pushed aside to the point where I have no influence in his life? Yeah. So that was one of the very big things that I, like, encountered, is just that you almost, like, when your kid is born, like, until you show up and sign the papers, or, like, say, like, yeah, I am acknowledged that you are the father of the child, you're not recognized.
Yep.
It's almost like every child is born fatherless until that paper is signed, but no child is born motherless, right? So yep. That was one of the very early things that I encountered. And then, like, you start seeing it through, like, even, like, government, you know, filling up government papers and bank statements. Like, you always have to bring this piece of paper saying, like, yeah, I am the father, I am recognized here. This is like, on the other side, women don't really have to go through that. They're recognized right away. And it's like, well, why? Like, if I'm there and I'm the father, maybe it's a utopic thought, but, like, in my mind, there should almost, like, if a man steps up to the plate, there should be the idea should be to, like, allow him to be and, like, let him be, like acknowledge that he is a part of this whole process from the get-go. Mm-hmm. Because we also go through pregnancy. That was one of the other things that, and sorry if I'm all over the place, nope. But, like, we also go through pregnancy in our own way without carrying the child.
And how so do you mean? But, like, can you clarify what you mean by that?
We also go through pregnancy?
Yeah.
You are not carrying the child. Our physiology is different from that of a woman, obviously, but we are also affected by everything that she's going through. We also influence everything that she's going through. It is also weighing on our, in our conscious, emotionally, we're invested. We are also, going through this very similar fluctuations that the woman is going through. And this is one thing that I'm gonna have to I'm gonna bring some papers and some research on this in subsequent shows on how, we are also like chemically in our bodies, we're also influenced by these experiences that we're going through. Mm-hmm. And so, the general idea is that the woman is going through pregnancy and we're almost like I don't even know if we're the sideshow. I don't, you know, if you're a man, you're like, yo, I'm also going through a pregnancy. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, well, I'm having a child too. I'm not carrying it, but I'm trying to figure out how to how to carry myself, how to carry this responsibility. What's going to be my role and what's going to be my position and where do I stand within the mix? And, every time that you go sign this paper saying that, oh yeah, so are you the father? And, what makes you a guardian? Mm-hmm.
So you are going through, just a lot of different thought processes that prior to, you wouldn't have had those thought processes.
You weren't sure.
Yeah. And different, I'm sure that, as you stated, as we go into research, I would be curious to see, is there any actual physiological changes happening, and whether it's, in your brain chemistry or, physically just with muscle mass. They say that, a lion, once he has children around, he ends up putting on more muscle mass. Maybe that's a protection thing, but is there a physiological change that's happening in men as they move from just single into all of a sudden in a relationship and then afterwards they're having a child? Is there something chemically or physiologically changing in a man? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, one of the things that I can quote right off the bat, not quote directly, but that I remember clearly is Dr. Robert Sapolsky, who spoke of how the level of testosterone in a man decreases after a man has a child.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So it's like, and if you can think of all the things that, all the behaviors that testosterone levels influence, once we have a child, it's those things decreasing is very interesting, right? Because you are also stepping into this nurturing role.
Interesting. Yeah. I'd like to see the.
So that's something that we have to note down that we should probably explore that on our second show.
Yeah, I would be very fascinated in seeing those changes. Yeah. I do know, again, once we hit 26, for males at least, our prefrontal cortex is...
that's a big one.
...is finally fully developed. I'm wondering, is there anything that correlates with that, with the statement you were just making about the testosterone? Is there any correlation between those two developments and maybe that they're happening at the same age group? I know people are starting to have children later and later. Back in the 80s when people were having children in their 18, was that same change happening to them at 18 as it was nowadays at 26 and stuff?
Yeah, that is interesting because, I come from a society where you are a man at the age of 14. Mm. Although I think it used to be like that here. But back home, you're 15, 16 years old, you are considered a man. Mm. And so, and once again, your prefrontal cortex does not reach its full maturity until you're 25 years old. Yep. So I had my child when I was 23 years old. So I was kind of getting there, but I was one foot in, one foot out. and that's what I mean. It was 9 months of absolute confusion and, maybe I just didn't know where to find the information, but I remember very often looking for information and not finding quite what I was looking for. Mm. And that was a big one.
Before we get too much into your life story, because I do want to dive into all that.
Yeah.
Just concerning this show, we've kind of talked about what your aspirations are with it. What are kind of your ideas in getting to those aspirations completed? Do you have any set ideas of what you'd hope for in the show?
Yeah. Okay. So, and I kind of drifted from that. So one of the big one is evaluate the research that have been published on these topics that influence either how core decisions are made and how some of these policies regarding family, regarding parenting, like the research that influenced these policies. Definitely dive into that and look at the last 10 years, the last 20 years, the generation of our parents and how they're influenced by these policies. And once again, the court has moved away from a lot of the things that were being practiced before, but the impact of it is long lasting.
Oh, for sure.
Right? It's still present. So
is that the tender year doctrine you were talking about?
The tender year doctrine. Mm-hmm. That's a very big one, right? So kind of like diving into the history of things and like doing frequent shows on like the history of the evolution of like, parenting rights, child rights, you know, the evolution of like family dynamics over the last years and how things have changed, how the economics have impacted the family dynamics. So that's going to be like one very big thing. The other component, once again, is going to be, people's experiences. Like you said before, we dive into my life experience. People's experiences, I think, are going to be once again our bread and butter. Mm-hmm. And that is because, like there's no better teacher than life, and the experiences that we have are just, they're so rich, but where do we go to talk about them? Right. So like someone like myself, I consider myself a 5-year court veteran. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a lot to say. I got a lot to share, and it's not legal advice, but it's experience based advice. And every time that I sit down to speak with somebody else who's been through it, I learned something. Right? How to conduct yourself in court. And that's a big thing, right? Like, also, like, if people could get some cues how to navigate the court system, I think that'd be big. And there, whether it's men or women, and once again, this, like, the show will have a focus on fathers, but it also applies to parents, right? Going over the experiences of other people will be a very big thing that I really want to like focus on. And it's just a layperson, random people. And when we're talking about experiences, we're not just going to be looking at experience of people who have children. We're going to be looking at experiences of people who don't have children yet, who maybe want to have children or don't want to have kids. We're going to be looking at people's experience with their own parents when their childhood and now the family dynamics they grew up in shape who they became, right? Because there's also a lot to learn from there. And, you know, those experiences that we've gone through with our parents also like very much shape how we raise our kids if we decide to have children or not, right? Those are the ways that I want to like achieve this goal, if that answers the question. And I'm terrible for going off topic and going off on rants. And so bring it back to the question if you feel like I didn't answer it.
that's perfect, man.
But yeah, it has been, 5 years. Like there's a lot to learn in 5 years.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your experiences.
My experiences starting with family court,
why don't we start from the beginning?
Yeah. Family.
Sure.
Family's a cool one. I come from Congo. So my family came to Canada. I was, 7.5 years old. My dad stayed in Congo. My mom basically took us through the war from, 1995, when our country was being invaded, she basically took us out of that jam and like brought us to Canada. And I got here first. I landed in Quebec City and, spent maybe 4 years there. And it was my older brother, younger sister. It was just our three over who came here. It was, very much the early years of our lives were very much about survival, you know. Being a woman in Congo, there is, just in general, it's a terrible country. So you don't have, judicial systems that are established like here. You don't have social programs that are established like here. If you're a woman, on your own, like the chances of you being able to achieve all these things are very slim. Mm-hmm. They're very slim. So my dad was a professor in Congo and was also a businessman. So my family kind of like was doing pretty good, you know. My dad had another wife, and that's when we dive into the polygamy. We come from polygamy. So my dad had another wife. When my mom hooked up with my dad, she knew. But that was a culture back then. Mm-hmm. That was socially acceptable. Until today, for the most part, it is socially acceptable over there.
And it is still there, like that.
Still like that. Oh, man. Still like that. People are still like, it's, you're not going to get that out of these people anytime soon.
So, I get that you grew up in that. Do you have much of an understanding of like the relationship, like relationships here in North America, like that, like the non-polygamy, monogamy?
Yeah, like I know this more than that.
Okay, so knowing this one, did that one, do you feel, cause any like effects on you? Did it have any change in your mentality or how you see family?
The greater influence came from the lack of a father, and I didn't feel it until I was way older.
Oh, so he was always with the other family then?
Well, so yeah, let's go back a little bit. So okay. When there was a point in time where my mom was like, I'm not in, like, I don't want to continue with this polygamy stuff or something like that, or what, and it's always kind of like blurry what went down there, because like now I gotta go dive into the history of like why they broke up specifically 20, like 30 years ago plus. Okay. Right. But essentially, my mom always had this vision of wanting to go to Canada. My mom was also like not really into the polygamy stuff anymore. So she basically, I'm pretty sure she threw my dad at the time an ultimatum. Okay. Either we leave and we make our way out of the country, or I'm going to figure out a way myself. And at that time, we also come from a society that was male dominated, where the man very much owned the wife. The
household and stuff.
Yeah, the household, the woman, the kids. Like, we were like, you're borderline, like, the man's property. Objects. And so to my dad, the question was like, well, how are you going to make it as a woman with three kids without a man? Mm. You're not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah. Behavior.
Yeah. You're not going to make it. Mm. You're not going to go anywhere. And my mom left them. So they were already separated.
Good on her. Well, strong woman.
Strong woman.
Strong woman.
But she had a vision though, right? Because her vision was always to get us here or in the United States. I'm glad it's here. Mm. But like, so my mom was always like, she was putting money aside for a very long time, just waiting to come here. So when things, when the war hit and it reached our doorsteps, my mom was in a position where she had, the capital, a little bit of the capital. She had a little bit of the networks to start getting us out of the country. So when the war reached our doorstep, and I mean like legit reach our doorsteps, my mom started making moves to get us out of the country.
Thank God.
And so she got me and my brother to go in one direction. Her and my sister went in another direction. And essentially I kind of like have some blurry memories of us like living.
Yeah, how old are you at this time?
Oh man, I was like 6 years old, 6 years old. Huh. I'm thinking 6 years old because I started to like form some degree of like memory of like the way I look at it is that I was conscious that I was alive at this point here, you know? So she started, it was actually the Jesuit priests who got us out of the country, helped us get us, like the church was big in getting us out of Congo. And so, my mom got us out of Congo and we went into Kenya, a neighboring country. And Kenya was like I came from a well-to-do family, like middle class back then. Like we lived fairly comfortably, you know? And so when we went to Kenya, it was my first taste of like looking at poverty. And like when you look at, when you're looking at poverty, almost like what you see on TV here. Not as bad as what you see on TV here, but it was my first time being like, holy crap, like poverty exists, crime exists, all these things are real. And so that was in Kenya. And my mom, we were housed at the, my mom also was working with the priest, the Jesuit priests, to make sure that we never went into a refugee camp, which was big because like refugee camps, that's like, it's really messy over there. So she got us into the, it was the YMCA in Kenya. And so the YMCA in Kenya housed us, basically the equivalent of like a drop-in center, like facility here. But I mean, that in comparison to a refugee camp, you're living good. Mm-hmm. So once again, I'm still very fortunate, right? Mm-hmm. And so from there on, my mom got us to, brought us to Canada, and we first landed in Quebec City. Mm-hmm. And at this point here, I'm like 7 years old. And, you know, like she grinded, man. Like she fought hard to get us out of the hellhole that was like developing, you know, where we came from, and then like going into Quebec City and then dealing with the challenges of being an immigrant parent in Quebec City. And one of the biggest challenges, man, is making sure that your kids don't go astray. Because one of the weird dynamics with a lot of immigrants is that a lot of us come here without our fathers. Mm-hmm. A lot of us come here with either our sisters, our aunties, or whoever could get in, will get in as, you know, however we can, like we'll get in. So like, I always grew up in like lower income communities, like government housing. Mm-hmm. And in government housing, you have a lot of these dynamics where the household only has one parent. And it's rampant. And, or the parents have this generational gap in between them and their children who are now growing up in this new system, this new culture. Mm-hmm. And they're completely disconnected from their children. Mm-hmm. And, so they can't even discipline, like one of the big, they can't discipline their children like they used to back home.
Yeah.
Like we got disciplined with the whip. Mm. Whether you're at school, at home, you got this over here, that's abuse.
For the greater part, yep. I mean, I got the belt myself.
You know?
Probably only once in comparison to
your scenario. I got used to the belt, man. Yeah, like, that's true, man. I got used to the belt.
Luckily, I never had to get used to the belt.
Yeah, no, I mean, I got used to the belt.
I get where you're coming from, man. Yeah, that's it was a lot different from here.
It's a lot different, man. So as a kid, you're like processing all this stuff, and you're always trying to catch up to the other kids. You don't, any other kid who doesn't have to go through these steps, you're always going to be playing catch up with them.
Yeah.
And so we had like growing up in government housing in Quebec City. My mom gets us out of that because all the kids were going astray. And then she brings us to Calgary, once again in search of a better future, and very similar dynamics. But Calgary was very interesting because we ran from one situation just to find ourselves into the same situation, even worse. Because now, like Calgary was like, I always say it, like I grew up with like 17 close friends in that community and nobody had a father. Mm. Nobody. And so when you're a kid, you're just going about like, when you're a kid, you accept everything as your reality, right? No matter how messed up it is, the way you rationalize it to yourself, it's like, oh yeah, this is how things must be. Mm. You don't really feel the impact of it until you're older and you can make sense of things.
Yep.
And you have to start taking responsibilities.
Yep.
Because, and that's the first time that I actually felt the impact of not having a father. Like, it was when I graduated, I was 18, 19 years old, and mom needed help, and I have to go work in a warehouse. I'd love to go to university and pursue, you know, education, but I can't do that. And I'm like, wait a minute, if I had a dad at home, I wouldn't have to do this. I could like just take care of myself and
So it actually was affecting you not only just in like mental capacity, but in again like just academically and
socially.
Wow, man. Yeah. Again, the thing that most people just don't think of, you know, they think about just the effects of, oh yeah, he's now going to be sad about that. But
yeah, it's like, I got daddy issues.
Yeah, right. I got that. But no, it does. It's this is again the conversation we needed to be having because again, most people's assumption would be just the mental factors. But as you're pointing out, there's many more factors that are affected in children that are going either with or without a father, you know?
You know, and that's one of the big things. We talk about like looking at the research. And if let's say we had like a show that only focused at looking at research, that'll be fine. Mm-hmm. That's great. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a lot of information in there. All this stuff about the impact of whether it's just whether it's the mother missing or the father missing, the impact of like growing up without either parents are very well documented. They're very much negative, but it's one thing to read it in a paper than to hear the story mm-hmm. and to see what the experiences are, where the actual challenge, how did you encounter these challenges and how did you overcome these challenges mm-hmm. and how far did they set you back? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I'm always playing catch up. That's what I feel like. I'm always playing catch up. But if you see where I'm at today and you hear my story, you're like, holy moly, you've like run laps around this planet and just to be where other people are, just normal, like, you know, like.
Okay, so let's go back to that. We've already got the aspect of coming from the Congo and then your mom running away from your father. So, once you got here to Canada, what got you into the snowball effect of which became a long legal battle for you? What's the story of now where you are in Canada and now how is it that you end up getting to court? What's that in between stage? How do you meet the, first of all, like how do you meet the lady? Did you guys meet here or did you meet in the Congo first?
No, we met here. Okay. We definitely met here. It's interesting because, and please make sure I come back to answering the question, but when I was reading the impact of like growing up in these families where you had just, you know, one parent missing, when I was reading the impact of it on a child's brain, while it's developing, mm-hmm. what it really came down to, man, is that you kind of like it. All those negative aspects that we will dive into them in like subsequent show once mm-hmm. we can like pull up the research and whatnot. But like absolutely. All these things, like what they really end up doing to you is they impede your capacity to make proper decisions. Mm. If you're hungry, you don't think properly. You don't think straight. If you're angry, you don't think straight. You don't think properly. If you are emotionally disturbed in any capacity, it affects your reasoning capacity, capabilities. And if you are like all these things that we start to look at eventually affect your ability to make good what would be like good rational decisions that other kids make.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is emotional intelligence. And you're correct, man. Like majority of people don't even consider emotional intelligence, let alone even know what it means. But
well, emotional and rational.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you cannot, like you go into these stages where you can't regulate your emotion and you find yourself angry and you're getting like into fights at school and you're like getting kicked out of school. Now you're like not achieving academically because you're always, you know, you're not regulating your emotions properly, which is something that I was not able to do at a very young age. Like I had a lot of anger, you know, and like I was a misfit. Like I never, I was very much a misfit. And it was always like a lot of these, like, and that's where I'm going to go back to your question. Like, what led up to me even being in a position where I'm like meeting this, my partner was, I mean, we met up, for lack of a better term, in the ghetto, you know, and she had no business there.
Yeah.
She came from Springbank and area.
Okay, so like right? Upper class.
Upper class. Okay. So she had no business there. Hmm. I had every business there, okay. You know, and like, but when you look at what we were all dealing with, in a way, it was like it really came back to a broken household, all of us. I even have like one of my closest friends who didn't come from the community directly, but when you look at him too, grew up without a father. So it's like there's like these things that we're all very much like disturbed children. Mm-hmm. Like we're all emotionally deranged. We're all trying to grow beyond our years. And so and these things catch up with you. These things catch up with you. So for me, it was, first of all, I had to survive growing up in community, like in these projects. I'll call them that. Like, and I'll explain why specifically later, but it was like, survive that, and then you make it out of that, and you're still dealing with the consequences of your decisions. Right. So like all the emotional disturbing, all the things that were disturbing you emotionally, psychologically, leading you to like make these irrational decisions where you're getting into fights, getting kicked out of school. You're an angry person. You don't really fit anywhere. You don't want to belong. You don't want to fit in. Like you're seeing kids who have a good life, who have more of a normal childhood. And you're like, you have a resentment against them. And so it kind of like pushes you away completely, where it's like by the age of 18, 19, if you're lucky to make it out of high school, like it was my case, like I was fortunate enough to just make it, but it was a big deal for me to get through high school. It was a big deal for any kid in my community to make it through high school. So, and one of the things that's going to come with that, it's either, you know, the vast majority of kids are not making it past high school. They're not really cared for at home. Like parents are either out working two jobs and not really there to care for the children. So what does that mean? That you're going out late, running back home at 2 o'clock in the morning before your mom or your dad comes back from work. And then like, that means that you are exposed to alcohol, all these things that are out at night. There's nothing good out at night, right? For a kid. Nothing. Like kids should not be out past like 8 o'clock. Yeah. As soon as the sun goes down, you should not be out there. So you start getting exposed to all these things. So now your life becomes a thing of like, it's a survival thing once again, because you have to get through this stage. And once again, your prefrontal cortex is not like, PFC will abbreviate it from here on. Your PFC is not even there. So you're like going through the wild years of your life with as little structure as you can possibly have. Mm. And so the likelihood of you having a child at a very young age is beyond, it's high.
Yeah.
It's very high.
Impulsive decisions. I'm trying to remember the others, but
there's a list of them.
Behavioral regulating activities that happen in the prefrontal cortex. And until it's developed, yeah, you're just not on a, you're not running on all
pieces. You should almost be in like a cage with like foams.
Like a little bit, man. A little bit.
Just like, you know, give you books to read.
That's right.
Just because, like, you, those are the years where you need the most structures, man. And that, those are the years where, like, you need your parents to really, really be there. If, you know, I mean, I'm sure other people, like, for me, those were the stages where, like, we're all going through these identity crises, but going through an identity crisis with your dad somewhere in the vicinity and your mom somewhere in the vicinity helping you guide you in any capacity is better than not having both of them or any of them at all. Huh. And so for me, I had a child at a young age because I was playing older than I was. Mm-hmm. I was trying to be older than I was.
Trying to be cool.
Beyond cool. Like I was doing, like I started everything at such a young age. Now that I have a kid, I'm like, how? Mm-hmm. Like, holy moly, this is 13. This is what you're supposed to be doing at the age of 13. Yeah. This is what you guys are doing at the age of 12.
I get that.
I'll tell you, when I was 11 years old, my My dream was to go to prison. I wanted to go to prison when I was 11 years old. Because growing up in the community where I grew up in, we thought that's where you learned how to become a man. And so it's like, where is it that an 11 years old kid got this in his brain? Like, and how much is it structure that you got it
out of your brain?
That's I almost went to jail now, Chuck. But like, no, I had to do a lot of like stupidity and like risk my whole life to the point where it's like you're running through such challenges at a young age that from like 13 to 16 years old, you're finding yourself in these insane situations that your life is on the line. Your life is literally on the line. And if it doesn't click in your head that your life is on the line, you're doomed. So for me, I was able to escape a lot of things. I was able to escape the prison system and judicial system. I was able to, my mom got us out of like, you know, my mom never really stayed on welfare. My mom got us off of welfare at a very young point. But like the economic entrapment is something that I'm still dealing with till today to some capacity, but I've came a long way, gotten out of it. But when I look at like the people from the community, although I escaped, you know, judicial system and like delinquency, I escaped those things. One of the things that I did not escape, like also like not completing high school was something that I was able to like dodge, and I was able to complete high school. And it's very important. Like, oh man, like, and I feel stupid saying that, but it's like I'm seeing the folks who don't just didn't complete that simple step, what should be simple, but it's like, it really affects your capacity to move forward in life. And there's research that there's a research document that I pulled up that we're going to go through where you're looking at, you know, how not having a child at a young age, not finishing high school, having children outside of marriage, all these things, how they affect your economic stability, whether you're living below or above the threshold in society. But like, so for me, I was able to escape a lot of these things. But one of the things that I did not escape was just having a kid at a young age outside of marriage. Before I finished university, post-secondary education. And that puts me into an at-risk population where it's like, I think it's like 20% of people who face these factors end up growing up, like grow up with and end up like living above the minimum income threshold that like, I'm gonna have to like pull the numbers. We're gonna explore that more specifically, but it's like, there's a very small percentage of people who come from this background and make it out. So for me, like, I met, you know, the mother of my child in a disturbed environment, in a very, very broken environment. And the likelihood of me going through the court system was super high because I was not making good decisions, man. Like, I look back at it right now and it's like a non-duh. Like, of course you ended up like finding yourself in these situations where both of you are two young parents who have very limited support, you know, just made it out of high school or didn't make it out of high school. And now you got to start raising a kid and you got to start figuring out from like this point on. So once again, like, and you know, it kind of like sets you back again. It sets you back again. And so it was like just all these dynamics of, and that's where it's like a lot of these things, I look at it and it's like, it was always about the decision making, man. Like, if you're not making good decisions in your teens, you spend your 20s correcting that. If you have a kid at 17, you spend your 20s and 30s correcting that. You spend, like, these things have such long lasting impact that that's why it's like, it's important to go through the experience of people so we can put the research in perspective.
100%.
If that answers the questions once again, because I probably went on another tangent.
No, but like, good, man. So we've talked a little bit about like how we how we want to have all of these things presented and where we hope for this to go. What is your, like, with all of this show and the shows we're going to present to everybody, what is your end goal to have for people?
My end goal is to create an information hub.
Okay.
That is going to provide people with, like, legal resources or resources for other people who are also providing resources. So kind of like create a web of information and, like, whenever people are going through these things, whether it's pregnancy, court, separation, they can kind of like see what other people did in similar situations. So, that's one of the big angles. The other one will be to, there's a point in time where if you're a woman going through a court system against a man, you're bound to lose as a woman. Mm-hmm. There's a point in time. Mm-hmm. And that changed. But the pendulum went completely the other way. Where now, if you're a man, you are a man going through the court system against a woman, you're like bound to lose. And once again, we're going through the tender years doctrine. And I think we men kind of shot ourselves in the foot with that whole thing. We'll get back into it. But anyways, and the court is kind of like trying to bring things back to a middle ground that is more fair to the children and that is more less disruptive to the child's development. And as the court is doing this, it's almost like it's not the court's, like, for the court, it's for the judicial system and family law, like, they have a very, like, difficult job that they try to do to their best of their ability, but it's not their responsibility to, like, reshape the culture outside of that. So most of us will run into these hurdles when we're going through separation, divorce, when we're going through all these challenges. And that's when we're like, so I was supposed to, there's all these ideas that we men, you know, it's not really our responsibility to raise the kid and it's the woman's job to do this and we can just screw off and, you know, get another partner and start over again. Like all these things, it's like, no, man, like, if like the culture, like what's out there influencing the culture and people's in people outside of the court system to start changing this assumption that we've had for a very long time, where it's like in this society, like if you are going to court, you are way better off, like showing, you're better, way better off when you're in a position where you can show that, hey man, I've been as involved in every single step of this procedure with child rearing as, you know, the mother had. I'm equally as invested. I do all the small things. I change the diapers. I go, you know, do groceries. I clean the house. I wash the laundry. I take the kid out to the park. I take him out to the activities. I don't do these things. I don't just stay to these things that are like, oh, this is the man's role and this is the woman's role. I've done the men's role. I've brought food to the table. No, like all these things, all these old assumptions that were present eventually hurt us in the long run. Mm-hmm. And I think one of my ultimate goals is to really, be another, platform that seeks to change that longstanding culture through dialogues and also by exploring research and teaching people about the history of it and learning for ourselves about the history of things. Mm-hmm. So that'll be like the ultimate goal, really, to kind of like start changing the culture and to start having dialogues about the experiences that we go through, because that will complement what is going on in the court system. Yeah. With time, where it's like, yeah, as a man, like you are not at a disadvantage to the degree that you think you are. Yep.
Well, and it's only through that dialogue that we'll change people's beliefs and change our own misconceptions of what we've personally believed, you know? Like, this is my greatest purpose in this, is that we get the dialogue going, and in the dialogue is where we will see positive changes happen for the children of tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. And it's... like, where else, like, I don't know, maybe I need to, like, dive deeper, but, and you know what, we're going to do this, we're going to, like, seek out who else is giving out this kind of information and having these kind of dialogues, mm-hmm. and we're going to, You know, we're going to have to create a website, but we're going to talk about, we're going to reach out to these people and we're going to connect with them, because this is not just a thing where it's like, oh yeah, there's already people doing this and it suffices to that. We're trying to like influence, if not impact, beliefs that have been present for the last 20, 30 years. You know, we've seen our parents go through these dynamics in one way or another, navigate these dynamics one way or the other, where you're, whether you're talking even about like nuclear families, people who have been able to keep it together. You know, I'd love to have on someone like, and I'm thinking about one of my friends specifically, but, who has been able to like, I mean, he has a stay at home wife and he's out there as a breadwinner, like things used to be. And they're keeping it together in modern society, in today's society, in such a way. And it's like, well, what are the challenges for that? Like, how do you guys navigate that? Right. And so it's not just about the breakups and the fights and the argument, but it's also how to keep it all together. And that's essentially like that would be like a third objective of this, you know, how do you, how are we going to keep it together? And, if not, how are we going to minimize the negative outcome that, the negative impacts and all these things that are, that children are experiencing, you know, like how are we going to like minimize the impact of that, of those, negative elements? So yeah, that'll be the third goal moving into this really. Yeah, for you, like what is it about this whole project or idea that has you like captivated that?
Oh yeah. Like I was saying, I would just like to, get the conversation, moving, get people talking about it. I think through dialogue is where we're going to see our biggest changes happen in the future. And so, if we can just get people acknowledging the fact that, children would benefit from growing up with both a mother and a father in their life and not just having to have it settled at one or the other, I think that that would be a benefit moving forward. So I would just like to see the research going into this, talk to some like-minded people that are influenced by the research, and also get researchers on here, the people who are actually in the field figuring this stuff out. I'd like to talk to everybody and just get the dialogue moving forward.
That is a very important point that you're bringing up, right? Talking to the researchers, the people who are writing the books, the people who are dealing with these kids in the shelter system, right? The people on the front line. Their perspective is very important. Also, and we've talked about this before, being able to bring a lawyer on the show will be amazing, you know, and I think being able to bring a judge on the show will be very interesting too. But of course, we have to, you know, build up to that. But that is a big thing that I'd like to do down the road, because listening to a judge talking had a great influence over my success in court. Like if I didn't, like I took this parenting course, and within this parenting course, I heard a judge talking about his perspective on what he sees. And one of the things that he said that really struck me was, you know, I see people come in my courthouse every other day, and these people are trying to convince me that the other person is a devil. When there was a point in time where these two people loved each other enough to conceive a child.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, that is me right there. And that is a lot of us going into this, you know? And so from there on, I understood that it was not about demonizing the mother of my child and making her look like this awful person. It was more about like, what's my contribution? And when I started focusing on what was my contribution, and I started like just telling about all the things that I've been doing with my kid since it was, you know, since it was a child, like my involvement, I detailed my involvement to them, and I stayed away from all the negativity. And it, if I hadn't heard that judge say that, that light bulb wouldn't have gone off in my head. And that had a very, very big influence. So it's like, if we could like, man, I get a ton of questions for any judge that will step on our show. I have a ton of questions for any lawyer that will step on our show. I have tons of questions for social workers. That's another very important component here. Not for you. Have you, cause you don't have any kids and, but you've had your experience of your own that was kind of like basically parenting. Like you stepped into that role at a point in your life.
I was in a child's life from, six and a half years is my guess.
6.5 years.
Yeah.
That's a long time. Yep. That is longer than, my lady right now has been in my son's life.
Hmm.
So that's big.
Yeah, it was a commitment. It was a commitment for sure.
Like, how old was a kid when you came in?
About
a month and a half.
Yeah.
A month and a half.
Month and a half, yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
How was that?
No, it was an amazing experience, man. It was best years of my life for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now, how were you helping a lot? Like, because, I mean, it's hard at first because you're like, what do I do?
Yeah, I kept a very, like, a backseat role. Like, I didn't try to discipline. I didn't I just never wanted to cross those boundaries, right? So, I just very much tried to see him as a friend because I didn't see, you know, I didn't think me enforcing myself. I mean, now don't get me wrong. He did call me dad and I called him son, so. But in the later years, for sure, there was a little bit more like hands-on with helping and like raising him. But in those first couple of years, no, there wasn't too much hands-on really when it came to the disciplinary side of things. I was in his life daily, so just playing around with him and stuff. But
and you guys lived together?
We were living together for sure from like the get-go. Yeah, it didn't take long for us to get into
a house
together.
Man, like, not many dudes I grew up around will step to the plate. Like, how old were you?
Oh, at the time, man, probably, I'm going to guess, maybe 22-ish is my guess. 23, somewhere in there.
22, 23.
Yeah, that's my guess. Maybe I might have been as old as 24, but yeah, somewhere in that era.
You're starting to reach that mature state. A little bit, kind of getting started, there.
That's right. 3 more years and my prefrontal cortex would have been developed.
And then I can make rational decisions. Yay. Yeah. Totally. Oh, man. Like, how do you look back on that experience at this point?
No, it was, like I said, great, great learning experience for myself. Would I go back to it? I mean, I still consider about having children. So it's something I'm not against, but on the same note, I'm thankful for the experience I had for sure. It was a learning experience and huge growth for sure. You know, like kids, that's one thing, they make you grow for sure, man.
They do.
Yeah, 100%.
Like they do.
Yeah, lots of growth there for sure.
I should have gray hair by now. Now, did you ever have a desire to have a child prior to that age? Like, I personally wanted to have a kid because I always wanted to be like, I always pretended to be the father around the house. I not pretended, like I tried to assume to fill that void when I was young.
Just last March, actually, would have been me and a girl. We were seeing each other there. We would have had a child and he would have been born, or she would have been born this March. So I definitely have an interest. I haven't been fortunate enough, but it's definitely, I think, still in the future, I would imagine. No guarantees. Like I said, my heart won't be broke if it doesn't happen. But
mm-hmm.
on the same note, there's always a hope, you know? There's always a plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
What's your family background? Like, do you still have both here? Like, yeah,
grew up in a smaller city, so smaller city, like I said, on a side of a city that was not very developed, so it felt very small town to us.
Yeah.
And man, my families were all very, very close still to date. We've always been quite a tight-knit family, and still to date, we are quite close to each other.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's really cool.
Me and my brother and sister were best friends. My mom and dad, like I said, I'm just, I can imagine them leaving. So I just, yeah, you got to soak up as much time with them as you can while they're still here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I love my family, man. I'm very fortunate to grow up in a tight-knit family. Now, that being said, my extended family barely know any of them, but I sure
like
am
cousins
tight with my,
and
yeah, you barely know any of them, man, but mm-hmm. I sure am tight with the immediate family for sure. Yeah.
Hmm. And like, so how long your parents have been like together for? Hmm. Like some 30 years? Like they're
They were together for, I'm going to say probably over 30 years for, like 32, 35 years is my guess. And then they separated a while back.
Oh, so they're
now,
separated.
Yeah, now they're separated. But to be honest, man, like it was for, I think, all of the kids. It was okay. Like we, you know, we were older. I was already past 18. So
yeah.
I know my dad was like pretty worried about how we were all going to feel. And my mom obviously was as well. But we were all well into our adulthood, you know. So
Dude, it's weird because it's almost like you want it to happen either very early or very late.
Yeah, exactly, man. 100%. Just not while you're like that, you know, like 2 years old to like... Yeah, 18. Well, even
17. But 2 years old is like borderline okay because you're not going to remember
catch
much
them
of it.
Before they have that memory.
Yeah,
for sure.
Catch them before they start remembering things. Like 100%. When it's like 4 or 5 years old, I don't know. And the research may be different. There's this question that I wrote down here. It's like, what is one of the assumptions that I have going in? Mm-hmm. And this may be one of the assumptions that at which age is it better to just break it off before you start causing some real damage. Mm-hmm. But like what I think what it may really come down to is the degree of toxicity to which the kids are exposed to at any particular stage almost.
I couldn't agree more.
You know, because like those two, you know, like those first year, second year, they're very, very important. You know, at that point, like the kid is not really talking. They're just observing. They're just looking. They're just soaking in. And if what they're seeing is toxicity, oh, well, that must be normal. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, this must be, you know, this makes me feel insecure. This makes me feel afraid, mm-hmm. you know? You know, at which age is it less damaging may just come down to not so much which age is damaging, but just the degree of toxicity that you're exposing the kids to. I mean, and of course, once you're like older with like 18, 19, you're like starting to reach fairly safe ground where you're like developing, you have a sense of who you are. Mm-hmm. You have you've developed your own identity to the best of your capacity at 18. You're not at 13 years old. You're not at 8 years old. You're not at, you know, you're not at these very like tender age years, I would say. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. And like, are you the youngest?
I am the youngest, yeah.
You are.
Yeah.
So you were 18 years old, like around 18 years old.
Oh, I was older. I was probably like 21 is my guess.
Oh, you're doing good.
Yeah, that's what I said, man. Like,
you're doing good.
I was well into it. No worries. But yeah, had it happened any earlier, that would have obviously affected me quite deeply, I'm sure of it. But no, I was just fortunate in that sense. My dad seen it as his duty to stay with her. Now, like I said, there's obviously going to be arguments about that as well. Was it better for him to stay around until we were 18? Maybe not, you know, but on the same note, that's stuff for another show.
Yeah, that is stuff for another show. Absolutely.
In conclusion, is there any other things that you are in hopes for this podcast?
Oh, man, I hope we get to talk to as many people as we can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
If I can say one thing, how about yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple people in specific I would really like. Like we were talking about Dr. Robert Sapolsky. It would be amazing to have
that be an honor.
Gentleman on here and get some information from him. But, you know, just anywhere we can find a professional in his field to talk about things around this. So like the child psychiatry is like we were talking about or lawyers,
mm-hmm.
Doctors of all kinds. Yeah, I just want to get as many professionals on as we possibly can.
So essentially what we want to do is we want to have dialogues. We want to talk to people. Mm-hmm. We want to learn from people's experiences and see what other people have gone through. That's essentially what we want to do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, that's, yeah. And with that, I think we can wrap it up. And yeah, on to the next one.
Okay, well, again, you guys, thank you so very much for joining us in this last hour. We will be coming back with some more podcasts to bring up the actual facts, the research, the documents, have the professionals on, and get introduced to some leading key head figures in this particular field. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us, and I hope you have yourself a wonderful day.
Yeah, absolutely. And we didn't even say our name once so far. That is Super Daddy Club, we call it. But also, to be like that much more inclusive, it's also about parents of tomorrow, right? And to include everyone in the picture. We don't want people to feel left out just because this is male focused or focuses on fathers even. I think the idea with that was just for us to try and focus on what we understand, try and fix what, from the point of view of what we understand the most. And that is dudes, what we are. but thank you very much for listening, and we will be back soon.
So my name is Ryan Ball, and this is
Super Daddy Club, parents of tomorrow.
Take care, you guys.
Thank you.